නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Actually, we were discussing Sunakkatta Sutta for several days or several months now. We started on December. Something wrong. Maybe you can increase the volume and see. Now someone talking, no? Yeah. Okay, now it seems good. Actually, we started Sunakkatta Sutta in last December, just a one-day program, and then we continued it in January, and now we have come to February. And just to give a short summary of the Sutta, Buddha was living in Vaisali at that time, in a place called Great Wood. And at that time, many monks approached Buddha, and then they declare that they have fully realized, or they have become fully enlightened. And many monks approach again and again the Buddha, and then they declare that they have become fully enlightened. And this scene was observed by one son of the Lichchavi called Sunakkatta. And this person seems doubtful about it. And after these monks left the Buddha, Sunakkatta approached Buddha, and then he mentioned, Bante, I have mentioned, I have seen, I have observed that many monks approaching you and declaring that they are now fully enlightened. Are they really enlightened? So there's a kind of a question. So at that time, Buddha mentioned that some are really enlightened, but some are not. So you can see even in the Buddha's time, so there are certain misunderstandings or overestimations. So Buddha mentioned that some are really enlightened, they are really arahants, and they come and in a way show their gratefulness, gratitude towards me, and they explain that they are attainment. On the other hand, certain others are really not enlightened, but they misunderstand their achievement, or they overestimated themselves, and they too come and explain that they are arahants. At that time, Buddha mentioned, when someone is coming and mentioning that I am an arahant, but I know that he is not a really arahant, I have a kind of a feeling that I need to further teach them. So this is the kind of explanation Buddha is giving. And later Buddha mentioned that different categories of people are there. So there are certain people who are more inclined towards the sensual desires, who are more into the five sensual chords, sensual gratification. And when they are dealing with similar type of people, so they are very like to be with them. So very much like having a good company, good association, because the other person, the other partner who is talking at that time also has a similar desires. And on the other hand, certain other group of people are there who are not that into sensual gratification, but they have some inclination towards spirituality. So then, when they are talking with another person, if he or she has similar attitude, similar approach, similar interest, then they are really getting on well, because the other party also has some similar interest. But on the other hand, if this person, assume that he or she is a more spiritual person, who has to deal with a person who is more into the sensual gratification, then there is no much kind of a match, there is no much kind of a association, good association. As a result of that, they are not really matching. And actually, Buddha gives various examples, various similes to explain how these different categories are meeting and how they are trying to cope with it. How their association happens. For example, for the very first one, when certain people who are more into the sensual gratification, when a person with the same interest are meeting, so they are really going on well, because they have the same interest. The simile given is very much like a person who left their hometown for a long period of for long ago, say several years ago, a person left his hometown and now he is living in a far remote country. Now he doesn't know much about his home country. You know that during those good old days, they didn't have any kind of communication. So only way to know their hometown is through another person coming from the same area. Due to some reason, now assume that this person meets a person coming from his hometown after several years. Then when he understood, okay, this person is also from my hometown, then there's that association, that company is really interesting, and they start to talk, and many hours they can spend in talking because they have their similar interests. So Buddha gives this example or simile to explain that when two persons are with same interest, they are with the same interest on the sensuality, sensual gratification, when they are meeting together and they are really going on well. On the other hand, when someone is more into the spirituality, more biased towards the concentration, when such person meets with the previous group, so they are not really matching, so it's very difficult for them to continue their maybe relationship, continue their association, their friendship, because there's a kind of a mismatch. So this is not difficult to understand, and even new people might have come across such kind of associations, certain friends. Sometimes you find difficult to cope up, difficult to continue with their relationship, because they are trying to pull you also to a different direction, which you are not now much interested. So when someone is going towards some other direction, so another person, when he is trying to pull to a different direction, then they are not really continuing. Now further explaining this sutta, actually Buddha tries to highlight certain dangers in this spirituality, because the very first incident reported in the sutta is that reporting or declaring that I am an arahant. A certain monk approached the Buddha and mentioned that I am an arahant, I am a fully enlightened being. At that time, when this Sunakkatta observed that and questioned the Buddha, and then Buddha mentioned certain monks are really arahant, certain others are not. So this indicates there is a kind of a danger, there is a kind of a misunderstanding possible even in the spiritual life. So these dangers are really worth considering, because we also has a possibility of getting to wrong direction, or even to wrong understanding, or even to overestimation. So we discussed in detail in the previous sessions on which occasions and what are the possibilities that we also go wrong. Say for example, just to recap what we have discussed, say for example, when a person attained first jhana, so if he doesn't know much about it, he doesn't know how to relate that with the Buddha's teaching, probably he might misunderstand he is an arahant now. So if he doesn't explain his own experience with another teacher, and teacher of course has to have a good understanding, then otherwise everything will be a kind of mess. Suppose that he doesn't have a teacher and he is kind of doing overestimation, then there's a big mistake happens from his side, because now he may not continue his practice as usual, because now he think I'm an arahant. Now he has come to the completion, so he is now behaving differently, thinking that I am an arahant. So these mistakes can happen. So with relate to these kind of experiences, there's a very beautiful sutta available in the Anguttara Nikaya, talking on the same line. It's a real incident happened during the Buddha's time, and at that time Buddha was living in Visipatanarama. So you know that Buddha delivered his first discourse at Varanasi, Visipatanarama, Visipatana. So during this period also Buddha was dwelling with many other monks at Visipatana, Varanasi, Visipatana. So there is a kind of a tradition or kind of a custom at the end of the Pindapata, at the end of the, say, having what we call the dana, then the senior monks get together and discuss some topics on Dhamma. So this was a custom at that time, and in this occasion also, on a particular day, certain senior monks get together and they start to discuss certain deep aspects of the Dhamma. So while they were discussing, there's another monk called Cittahatti Sariputta. So his name is given as Cittahatti Sariputta. So this monk again and again interrupt these elderly monks. So he come and interrupt, not really disturb him, but he is trying to put his own idea. Now you see, now there's a kind of a hierarchy available in the monks. So when certain senior monks are discussing some certain deep aspects of the Dhamma, but it's really inappropriate a junior monk come and interrupt, because it's not respectful. And not really respectful just to the senior monks, even not respectful to the Dhamma. Because assume that someone is discussing some deep aspects of the Dhamma, and another person coming and time to time putting his own idea in a manner to interrupt the whole discussion, then it is not inept. This is not appropriate. Now, among the group was one Arahant, a very famous one called Mahakottida. Probably you might have heard about Venerable Mahakottida. So Venerable Mahakottida was among the crowd, and so he sort of admonished this Venerable Cittahatti Sariputta, don't do so. So now there's a deep discussion going on among the senior monks. So you got to behave well, not to interrupt this discussion currently happening among the senior monks. So in the group, there were other monks who are kind of friends, supporters of the Cittahatti Sariputta. And they actually little unhappy about Venerable Mahakottida's comment. And so they actually tried to safeguard Venerable Cittahatti Sariputta. It's a very natural incident, isn't it? So, I mean, very much similar to today. So different people have different associations, so they like to defend their friend. The same thing has happened. Certain other monks who are the friends of Cittahatti Sariputta, so they try to defend Venerable Cittahatti Sariputta. So they approach Venerable Mahakottida, and they mention this Venerable Cittahatti Sariputta is also well learned, and he is also fully attentive. Didn't say fully attentive, he is also competent in explaining his own ideas, putting his own ideas, and therefore he is suitable in this company, he is suitable in this association or in this discussion. Therefore it is not better to avoid him, to prevent him from putting his own idea. So at this instance, Venerable Mahakottida gave a really interesting explanation about certain aspects where we can go wrong. So this is the point that I like to highlight today, because it is really worth. And he mentioned it is very, very difficult to have a kind of a proper assessment about a person just with a short association, or just by looking at the surface aspects. It's very, very difficult to have a deep understanding about a person. Now he is giving a long explanation about different scenarios. The first scenario he takes is about a monk who is with a teacher or with another elderly monk. Now, when he is being with the teacher or another elderly monk, so he behaves really well, because he is with the teacher and there are other elderly monks, and therefore he really behaves well, and he respects the Dhamma, respects the teachers, respects elders, and he doesn't go with wrong directions. He really restrains himself, and there are no other inappropriate associations with the lay people, and he is really behaving well. But on the other hand, suppose there's a situation now he is being alone, is now away from the teacher, away from the other elderly monks. On that occasion, now he gets the opportunity to talk with others, talk with lay people. Now there are certain customs among the monks. Buddha mentioned that, say when you are a samanera, you know, when one becomes a monk, so it is typically he spend a kind of time as a novice monk with 10 precepts. So at that time he is being looked after by seniors and explains certain aspects of the Vinaya, the discipline. So it's a kind of a learning. And again after he become fully ordained as Upasampada monk, still he is considered as a junior monk and Navaka. And Buddha mentioned at least 5 years you have to be under a teacher. So these are actually helpful for the betterment, for the what we say as the for their restraint, and again for their well-being. Is really much worth. So only after 5 years is little free to move, depending on the approval of the teachers, and then he is not that really restrained under a teacher, but now he already got some restraint. Only after 10 years he is considered as a thera. Now he is independent, he can really move freely. So likewise, certain customs Buddha has mentioned when a monk could be considered. Now in this situation, with the Venerable Mahakottida mentioned, suppose that particular monk that we just before now mentioned, now he is really behaving well when he is being with the teacher and when he is being with the other senior monks. Now he, due to certain reason, he got an opportunity to be freely move, but he doesn't know how to really restrain himself. He actually was restrained because while he was with the teacher, while he was with the senior monks, but now he got a freedom. Now he frees. Now he behaves in an inappropriate manner. He deals with the others, he talks with the other people, he also starts to have kind of intimate relationships, talks with the other, say, kings, queens, and etc. etc. So now he does not restrain himself, limit himself, he doesn't know the boundary, and ultimately he ends up with burning with lust, and ultimately destroyed. So this is a scenario Venerable Mahakottida explained, and he gave a very interesting simile. He talks about a crop-eating monk, crop-eating bull. Now you know there are bulls, cows. Now those have to be looked after by a shepherd. Now suppose there are a herd of cows being looked after by a shepherd, and suppose they are close by a paddy field or close by another harvest. So if the cow herd or the shepherd is not there, what happened? Now when cow herd or the shepherd is there, so what do you think? These cows or bulls, are they really going to destroy that harvest, or are they really going to that paddy field? What do you think? When the shepherd is present, they can't, no, because they are afraid of the shepherd. And the shepherd is there always with the stick and all the things, so they know very well, okay, he is the master, so I better behave well, otherwise I'll be in trouble. So this is how, maybe this is how the cows are thinking. So they have the bitter experiences, how they being hit by the master, being hit by the shepherd. What do you think? So this is how Venerable Mahakottida questioned the other monks, the other group of monks coming to defend Venerable Chittapati Sariputta. Now Venerable Mahapati, the question is, what do you think? So these cows, if they got an opportunity to go to that copse, to go to that harvest, and there is the shepherd is absent, what do you think? Do they really behave the same manner at that occasion? What do you think? Will they restrain themselves without going to the benefit, without going to the harvest? No, right? I mean, they will simply go there and destroy the whole thing. So similarly, Venerable Mahakottita mentioned, so similarly a monk, if he got a chance to be free from the teacher and the other elderly monks, so he will misbehave. He will destroy himself, and he may even destroy. So this is one scenario he is explaining. Now you can see in a way how worthy is the discipline, how worthy is the restraint. So without it, actually we can't think of, I mean, it may take some time for us to really restrain ourselves with our own understanding. But in the previous occasion, without much of an understanding, due to certain respect, due to certain laws, disciplinary rules, so then we are behaving well, just because of respect or honor, or with little bit of afraid to break the rules, so likewise we behave well. But if the everything is not available, then certain people used to misbehave. So this is one scenario Venerable Mahapati explained. Now there are other scenarios which are another really worth paying our attention. Now Venerable Mahakottita talks about a person who is able to attain first jhana. Now you know, attaining first jhana is also not an easy task. So you need to practice really well, and you have to practice, say, Anapanasati, for example. That is just the one method to attain first jhana. And it's maybe certain months of practice, maybe even for another person, maybe even years of practice. And if he is mastering first jhana, that is maybe years of practice, because it's not, I mean, just attaining first jhana just for a once upon a time, not a big deal thing. But being a mastery on being a master of first jhana, it requires a fair amount of practice. Now, in the second scenario, Venerable Mahakottita explained, when a person has really mastered the first jhana, now there's a possibility of thinking, yes, now I have achieved first jhana, now I am with the first jhana, I am a master in the first jhana, I can have first jhana at any time. So these are the possibilities, these are the areas that he can master first jhana. So when he masters first jhana, now what do you think about his own defilement? Is he frequently interrupted by lust? Is he frequently interrupted by, say, anger? What do you think? No. Why? Yeah. So due to the power of first jhana, and he is frequently attaining first jhana, so due to the power of first jhana, so those defilements are suppressed. Now, Venerable Mahapandita mentioned, so this person now got an opportunity to talk with others, deal with others, be with others, associate others, others in the sense the lay people especially. Now what's the situation? Now assume that he was in the monastery, maybe a remote monastery, maybe in the forest, and he was able to attain first jhana frequently, and he's a good practitioner. Now he thinks he is free from defilements also, because he doesn't experience any defilement due to the power of the concentration. And now due to certain reason, now assume that he come to Kalalgad. Now Kalalgad is safe in a way, because you also are practicing. But suppose that he is going to a city, and he, due to certain reason, he has to associate other people. People in the sense, not just the males, even females. So they come and talk with him, and he I mean, they like to offer many things, and they like to offer dana, they like to offer gilam pasa, they like to offer laptop, offer a tab, whatever the interesting thing. Now, more and more association improves, and many associations, many people come to deal with, talk with this particular monk. And what do you think about the concentration now? Now the concentration is going down, right? I mean, this practice become less and less, so he doesn't have much time to practice now. He has to talk with these people, sometimes attend to their, say, ceremonies, to go to their, say, rural ceremonies, maybe to the other offerings. So now he has many tasks to do. Now Venerable Mahaprabhu mentioned, now he is losing his concentration and he is in a way going through a kind of a downfall. And he is mentioning, now he even starts certain intimate relationship with certain people and ultimately is broken. He is giving a very beautiful simile. You know, during the old days, now the rods are not really carpet rods. Rods, I mean, you know, these are typical rods. And sometimes when many carts, bull carts or horse carts are being traveled in those roads, so it's become more dusty. A lot of dust is available. Suppose now it is raining like this. What happened to the dust? No dust, right? So everything become muddy. Now no dust available. Now Venerable Mahaprabhu did the question from those monks, what do you think? Do you think that dust never appear in those roads? What do you think? Will the dust never appear again in those roads, crossroads? So then the other monks answer, no, Bhante, I mean, the dust may reappear when rain stops, and again dry season starts, and again when other horse carts, bull carts start to travel in those crossroads, again dust may reappear. So similarly, Venerable Mahaprabhu mentioned, even though mind being restrained due to the prasjnana, the concentration, now there may not be any dust. What is the dust? Defilements. Defilements are the dust. So, it doesn't mean those dust may not reappear. Due to some reason, if the mind gets an opportunity to involve in various other things, associate certain people, and get on to various mundane activities, and he loosens his restraintment, he loosens his practice, then the possibility of reappearing dust, reappearing defilement is possible. So this is the danger in a way that we have to face in a way. So that is where we have to continue the practice without much of an interrupt. So even when you are a master of prasjnana, it doesn't guarantee that you never get lust, you never get angry, or you never get various other defilements. There is a high possibility that once you are away from those jhanic experiences, and once you don't have enough time to practice, and again there are other invitations coming from various different people, and you are also having more inappropriate association, then you may downfall. Then, without stopping, now Venerable Mahaprabhu go to the second jhana. Now, second jhana is even more superior than the first jhana. You know, you have heard about it, right? The first jhana has five jhana factors, and it is somewhat vulnerable in a way, because again and again the mind has to apply to a particular object. So, there's a little vulnerability is there, but when it comes to the second jhana, so the mind is fairly firm. Concentration is very strong and kind of a firm stability they are in the second jhana when compared with the first jhana. And even here, Venerable Mahapandita mentioned that this particular person, he achieves second jhana and he becomes a master in second jhana. And he is now somewhat confident in second jhana, and now he has kind of an overestimation that he is a master and he is free from defilements and he is attained. So he now start to associate, as in the previous case, start to associate with people. Maybe start talking, maybe start writing and dealing with them, participating in their occasions, ceremonies. And now slowly he loses his practice, concentration, and now slowly again the defilements arise. He may start with unnecessary relationships, intimate relationships, ultimately destroy. Second jhana. So Venerable Mahapandita gave a very interesting simile here as well. You know, second jhana is explained supreme in the piti, rupture. Very beautiful simile Buddha gives to the second jhana in suttas like Kayagatasati Sutta. Buddha explained second jhana is like a very beautiful reservoir, very beautiful pond with very cool water always spilling out. But no water coming from north direction, no water coming from south direction, no water coming from east direction, no water coming from west direction, and there is no rainfall also. But water spills out. How? How water spills out? If there is no any streams coming from any of these directions, and even there is no rain, still how water is spilling out? Yeah, internally at the bottom there is a spring, right? So from that cool spring continuously, there's a cool water coming to the reservoir. So there's a continuous outflow. Similarly, when Buddha mentioned the person who experienced second jhana has this rapturous experience, which is more blissful, and continuously his whole body, whole mind is filled with rapture. Such a beautiful simile Buddha is giving. Now, Venerable Mahapandita also very closely give an interesting simile here. Now, he mentioned, now, when you consider a reservoir, maybe a pond, a large pond, now there are shells, right? I mean, closer to the pond, there are shells, there are pebbles, and there are gravel. Closer to the, say, bank of the reservoir, you can see them, right? So those pebbles and gravel and shells, those are visible. But when rain falls, now the reservoir starts to spill out. Now the simile that Venerable Mahapandita is giving. Now what happens to those shells and pebbles and gravel? They all disappear, right? I mean, because now water overflows. Now you can't see the pebbles, now you can't see gravel, you can't see shells, because now water overflowing spills out due to heavy rain. Now Venerable Mahapandita asked a question from that group of monks. What do you think, monks? I mean, now you can't see pebbles, shells, gravel. Do you think that never they appear or never they reappear? You can't say so. Then when this group of other monks mentioning, no, Venerable Sir, they can reappear because people start to make use of this water, other animals come and drink water from the reservoir, and rain may stop, and now there's a dry season again arise. Now again slowly those pebbles, gravel, shells start to reappear. Similarly, when Venerable Mahapandita mentioned, even though right now if a person experiences second jhana and has no lust,
has no anger, it doesn't mean he is completely free from anger, completely free from lust. If there is a possibility of depriving from this situation, depriving from this concentration, then the risk is there to reappear those defilements. And now he approaches third jhana. Third jhana is even mature in a way. Second jhana is more into rapture, so it's more blissful. Now Venerable Mahāpuruṣa explained the third jhana. Third jhana only has happiness, that is more mature happiness than the gross kind of rapture. Instead of piti, it has sukha. Sukha is the more predominant. So it is more blissful, more mature kind of happiness. Now a particular monk is now developing the jhana. He becomes a master in the third jhana. He can attain third jhana at any time. It's very much like it's kind of a vehicle. Anytime he can take that and go to any place. At any place he can attain third jhana. He can dwell there at any length he wants, any duration he wants. And he can emerge from the third jhana at any time. So likewise he masters the third jhana. Now after mastery, so he becomes confident and even he becomes overestimate himself. He explained himself as I am a master in third jhana. You know, I mean, when someone has achieved something, even in the spiritual side, so you get a kind of a feeling that I am a master in that. So this is a typical behavior, you know. Now you assume that you are excelled in something. Now you want to tell that to someone, isn't it? You want to show that. Otherwise, why are you mastering it? So assume that you are passing an exam, and you want to not just pass, right? You want to take a distinction. You want to get an A pass. Then you are the first, or you want to get a first class at the university, and then go for the postgraduate. Now you will become a doctor, a PhD holder. For what? To show off. I mean, I have several letters at the end of my name, so I am better than you. So you are a special person now. So this is the mentality we have. So this person also, now he spent a lot of hours, days, months, years in mastering third jhana. And you can't attain third jhana without attaining first jhana and second jhana. It's a kind of a gradual process. And you reach third jhana, it's much better than first and second. Now he has something to explain, isn't it? And to show. Now he becomes overconfident. And he too got a chance to talk with others, deal with others, associate with people, maybe teach with people. Come to Kalagoda. So I doesn't have third jhana opportunity. So I am a little safe in that sense. There is no third jhana. So now this person also, this monk, also start to associate many people, and ultimately he also ended up with this role. Now he also, Venerable Mahāpuruṣa gave another interesting simile. Now there is a person who had a very good meal. Suppose that he went to a festival, a kind of a ceremony, and he had a very beautiful and very delicious food, and he is full. Now he is full. But once he come home, so his wife is inviting him, telling that there is some leftover food. Would you like to eat? What do you think? Is this person interested of having that leftover food? So these similes are really interesting. I mean, these are talking really to the point. So the wife has kept some leftover food. So wife also interesting, isn't it? But actually, Venerable Mahāpuruṣa mentioned that the wife is offering that I put actually.
So there are some leftover food. So this leftover food is not appealing to the person because he is now already got some very delicious food. Now does that mean, now Venerable Mahakot is a question from the group of monks. So does that mean he never or ever have an appeal on leftover food? So there may be a situation, now the world is on the edge of a war, there may be a scarcity of food, leftover food also may be useful, that may be possible, isn't it? So when things are getting worse and there are no much food available and you haven't gone to a festival, you just have to return back home from hard working. Unfortunately, what is available is just leftover food. And you are so hungry, you are so tired. So at that time, even leftover food is really worth, right? So therefore, these other monks explain, no, no, therefore, leftover food is also worth on another occasion. Therefore, you can't say this person will never expect or appeal to this leftover food. Similarly, Venerable Mahakotita mentioned, even though this particular monk who is now really blissed out with the third jhana, it doesn't guarantee that the possibility or vulnerability for defilements is not there. Risk is still there. He can again revert back to the previous defilements. Even though currently he is deprived from defilements, still the risk is available. There is a possibility of reverting back to the previous situation or reverting back to the requirements. Now he is coming to the fourth jhana, even better stage. You know, when it comes to the fourth jhana, is more into the equanimity, is more mature. First jhana is in a way more into the little bit of disturbance because of again and again applying the mind. When it comes to the second jhana, it is more little gross because of the rapturous experience. So you are bodily also, you feel rapturous, certain maybe goosebumps or little waves-like experiences. The second jhana is more little gross experience. When it reaches the third jhana, it is more happy, contentment. But when one reaches the fourth jhana, it is more mature. Equanimity is more into the maturity, and again the concentration is even stronger. Fourth jhana is the level that one can even attain the abhinna. So that explains that the fourth jhana is so powerful. And here Venerable Mahakotita explained, a certain person masters fourth jhana. And even after he masters the fourth jhana, so he can attain fourth jhana at any time, can emerge from fourth jhana at any time.
So fourth jhana is much mature and more into the equanimity. And equanimity being the main determinant factor of the fourth jhana, one can say it is more stable. And again, the concentration is also very high. And it actually has to go through previous stages, first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, and then one reaches the fourth jhana, and he is now mastering the fourth jhana. So after mastering fourth jhana, he can attain fourth jhana anytime, he can dwell in fourth jhana anytime, he can emerge from fourth jhana at any time. So likewise, certain mastery is there with a particular person, with a particular monk. And Venerable Mahakotita mentioned, even though now he is master in fourth jhana, so he has a kind of a conceit, he has a kind of an overestimation that he is free from defilements and he is a master, and so he is now more capable, and now he start to associate others as in the previous cases. Now he is associating lay people, going to various ceremonies maybe, and start with various other activities. Now he is losing his inner silence, or more into many activities. Now he become little busy, more and more busy. Likewise, now his area, his experience diverts, and ultimately end up with various associations, intimate relationships, and ultimately disrobe. Now the simile given in this case is a kind of a reservoir, a mountain glen. That's a lake. Now among the covered reservoir bowed by the mountains, there's a lake. And that lake, since there is kind of a coverage coming from the mountains, so there are no waves in the lake. Now, you know, in the typical other lakes, even for a small wind, there are waves generates in the surface of the reservoir, in the lake. But on the other hand, in this particular situation, since it is being covered by the series of mountains, though the major threats to its peace or the calmness is not there, so therefore there are no waves in this particular lake. Now Venerable Mahakot, the question, does this really mean, does this really guarantee that this lake will never has any waves in the future? What do you think? So again, Venerable Mahakot mentioned there is a possibility of a very heavy rainstorm. So that is also possible, no? Sometimes rainstorms are there. Even though the typical winds being blocked by the other, these mountains, there's a possibility that's kind of a heavy rainstorm. So on such situation, this even the this particular lake is not free from the waves. It's also becomes kind of vulnerable to it. So this stormy situation takes this even this particular lake into the kind of a turmoil or turbulent situation. So similarly, Venerable Mahakottita mentioned, even a monk, even though he has lot of tranquility, lot of equanimity, just because of the fourth jhana, it does not guarantee that he is completely free from defilements. He will never get on to the wrong side. He will never get on to the wrong associations. And he will never disrobe. There is no such guarantee. Now, Venerable Mahakottita interestingly talk about another situation. That is more into vipassana. Now, till that, actually we were discussing samatha. First jhana is through samatha meditation. Second jhana through samatha meditation. Third jhana through samatha meditation. Fourth jhana through samatha meditation. What would be the other situation? Can you guess? Now suppose a monk who is practicing vipassana, and actually one can practice samatha and then go into this stage as well. After practicing samatha, again he can practice vipassana and can get on to this stage. And I'll just give you a summary of attainment. Now suppose someone is practicing vipassana and he is practicing, say, elements meditation, again and again recognizing element characteristics. And more and more he understands the elements. Now there is no person, there is no monk, there is no woman, there is no man. What is available is nothing but elements. So he gets more understanding about the situation. Now even the elements further and further observed, and he understands their impermanent nature. So these elements are very quickly arising and passing away, very inconstant, quite vulnerable. So these elements are always oppressed by this arising and passing away. So now he is keep an eye on this situation. So it's so vulnerable, so impermanent, so inconstant, quickly arising and passing away. So that makes him unable to recognize the real type of element. So previously you can recognize, okay, this is the characteristics of earth element. These are the characteristics of water element. These are the characteristics of air element. These are the characteristics of heat element. So likewise you can distinguish. But as you move forward, so that distinct characteristics become more common. Now you can't distinguish which type of element are they, but now they all behave in a similar fashion, in a similar manner. So every element behave in a similar fashion, similar manner. So they all have a characteristics of arising and passing, very quickly arising and passing. More and more, when someone observe this, kind of a dispassion arise in his mind, because, you know, in order for passion to arise, in order for kind of a lust to arise, in order for kind of a desire to arise, there should be something beautiful. There should be something interesting. There should be something distinct. Certain distinct characteristics should be there. If everything is kind of blurred, everything like a flux, everything is mixed up, there are no boundaries, there are no lines, there are no other shapes, what do you think? Then the beauty has no absent, right? The beauty is no more. Now everything kind of blurred. Everything like a flux. As a result of that, the dispassion arises. But the person is further continuing with the practice. The whole this scenario is showing constantly the inconstant nature, the impermanent nature, quickly arising and passing away nature. And ultimately the mind sort of prevents from taking signs, prevents from taking marks of the situation, of the elements. As a result of that, the clinging reduces, grasping reduces, and mind becomes free. So what does this concentration is called? Can anyone answer? Animitta, right? Animitta Samadhi. Animitta means that the person can't make or can't have marks. Mind is incapable of grasping marks, incapable of grasping signs. So as a result of that, mind simply discard this whole scenario, whole situation, and it becomes free. Animitta Samadhi. Now this particular person now has actually reached this Animitta Samadhi, this fifth scenario, rather sixth scenario, Venerable Mahakottita explained. Now this person, the person who is with Animitta Samadhi, now he is mastering it. He can quickly get on to it, and he can dwell there for a long time. Does he have lust at that time? How about anger? How about jealousy? How about conceit? Nothing is there, right? I mean, even more powerful than the previous cases, because he went through a fair amount of practice. Because, I mean, previous cases, actually, the person doesn't need much about an understanding. It's only a matter of power of concentration. But here, fair amount of understanding is also there. As a result of that, the mind becomes signless, not grasping, not catching the signs, marks. Now mind is free from signs, marks, so the signless concentration, markless concentration. Now Venerable Mahakottita asks a question from the group of monks. Does this really guarantee this monk ever will not get on to lust, will not get on to anger, will not get on to any other defilements? Can that be guaranteed? So the question asked from us in a way. So we also sometimes claim, no, I mean, we are in the Vipassana side. We are much better than the concentration people, Samadhi people, and this is a real sermon to us. So then, when will Mahakottita give another simile? So in those days, when consider royal army. So this royal army consists of elephants, horses, other, soldiers, drums. And now Venerable Mahakottita gives an example. Suppose a royal army is crossing a forest, a huge forest, a huge army, a huge royal army with all the vehicles, elephants, horses, and many, many other soldiers. That whole group is now spending a night in a forest. What do you think? Are they really noisy or are they really silent? Royal army with many elephants, with many horses, with many soldiers, noisy, right? So there are, I mean, horses are sharp, screaming and elephants are trumpeting and army soldiers are, you know, they are not, I mean, monks, no, they are soldiers. So now when Mahakottita asks, what happened to the sounds of the crickets? You know, the crickets, the kind of insects available in the forest? The sounds of crickets, can someone hear the sounds of crickets when that huge army was dwelling at that nine in that particular sound, in that particular forest? Now you can't hear, right? Because the sound, the forest become really noisy because of the people, soldiers, other vehicles shouting, screaming of the animals. So many things are there. So the sounds of the crickets is not visible. Or not hearing, audible. Now, Venerable Mahakottita asks, what do you think, monks? Does this really mean that you will never heard the sounds of crickets? Never hear the sound of crickets? You can't guarantee, no? I mean, the royal army may not spend every day on the forest. So, they may pass the forest. They may leave the forest. And one day, once they leave the forest, again the forest become the real natural forest. There are not be much about noise. And there may be a silence. At that time, again the sounds of crickets may appear audible. Similarly, Venerable Mahakottita explained, even when a certain person has achieved the Animitta Samadhi, the signless concentration, it doesn't guarantee the reappearance of defilements is impossible. Still risk is there. So therefore, he mentioned, if such person is now going to the people, associate other people, start talking with other people, engage with various activities, and start various relationships, associations, and even go to intimate relationships, and ultimately sort of overcome by lust and ultimately disrobe. Actually, it has happened to Chittahatti Sarisutta. So the real person who was the person who is involved in this whole situation is the Venerable Chittahatti Sariputta, and Venerable Mahakottita gave the whole explanation about the vulnerabilities, risks available in this whole spiritual practice. And he is explaining the situation, what are the different risks available. Even though Venerable Chittahatti Sarisutta was capable at that time, even to interrupt and put his own idea in that group of elder monks, later he disrobes. And then actually other monks, they were a little shocked. And they approach Venerable Mahakottita and ask, Banti, how did you know this is going to happen? Are there any divine beings come to you, approach you and told you that this is going to happen? Or because of your own wisdom that you understood it? Then Venerable Mahakottita mentioned that both has happened. So even the divine beings approach me and they mention that such vulnerability is there. And I myself understood. So the direction moving is not really good. So this kind of a risk is there. And this can happen. And it has happened. But fortunately, these monks went to Buddha as well. And they again complained to Venerable Buddha, to the Buddha, that this thing has happened. Venerable Mahakottita made this kind of prediction. He showed the risk. And it has happened. But Buddha made a really beautiful, foresightful comment. He mentioned that even though Venerable Chittahatti Sariputta left, he soon will understand the repercussions. he soon will understand the sort of rough nature of the lay life. He soon will understand the consequences of the lay life. Actually, he returned back. and he probably have understood his mistake, and then he never get on to the wrong directions, and he attained arahantship. So actually, the sutta explained very beautifully the risk available in the spiritual life. So even though one has attained first jhana, even though one has attained second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana, signed as concentration, even though one is associating good teachers and friends and other practitioners, it doesn't guarantee the complete emancipation. It doesn't guarantee that no defilements may arise in one's mind. So these are the things that I want to point out with respect to Sunakkatta Sutta, because Sunakkatta Sutta also explains about such vulnerabilities, such risk available in the path. So with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. And with this information and with these directions, with these instructions, so let us practice Buddha's teaching diligently and with much restraint and with much care, much attention, so that we may not face vulnerabilities, we may not face dangers. We may be able to continue our path without much of a problem, without much of this kind of deviations, with this kind of downfalls explained in this sutta. Thank you very much for attentive listening. So today actually we have gathered with some difficulties. Anyway, we were able to practice as much as possible, participate in the Dhamma discussion and listen to Dhamma sermon. And all the merits that we have accumulated, let's pass to all the past level relatives, whoever in need of merits, and let's wish for ourselves also to attain path fruition nibbana. While keeping these good wishes in our mind, let's recite the traditional verses. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ākāsatthāca bhummattha devānāga mahiddhikā puññantaṁ anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu sāsanaṁ. Ākāsatthāca bhummattha devānāga mahiddhikā puññantaṁ anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu desanaṁ. Ākāsatthāca bhummattha devānāga mahiddhikā puññantaṁ anumoditvā ciraṁ rakkhantu mam paraṁ. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā hontu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā hontu ñātayo. Idaṁ vo ñātīnaṁ hotu sukitā hontu ñātayo. Imina puṇya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.